Here's a fact for you. Not all synthetic motor oils are created the same. Crude oil is like a bag of mismatched rocks, all different sizes and shapes coming together. Natural gas is more like a bag of marbles, all uniform in size and shape, designed to work together, reducing friction in your engine. That's why when Pennzoil reinvented motor oil, they started with natural gas, not crude. Pennzoil synthetic base oil is 99.5% free from the impurities you'd find in crude oil. So, the next time you need to change your oil, remember to ask for Pennzoil synthetic motor oil made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We had Buster Olney on with us the last half hour, and he is not moving off his dire predictions for Major League Baseball. 5% chance that they even get this thing going out of the gate, and he gives them no chance to crown a World Series champion. Still puts them at 0%. We'll see how that plays out, but we've certainly seen more and more people in baseball saying, yeah, I don't think I'm going to go down this
road. We have dubbed this show today. We've given it a theme, and that theme is reality check.
Yep.
As more players are starting to opt out, we saw DeAndre Jordan from the Nets. He had COVID or is going through it and is opting out. Spencer Dinwiddie had as well, but he hasn't decided if he's going. Wilson Chandler from the Nets, we already talked about yesterday, is opting out. So players are opting out. We've had four in baseball opt out for various reasons, mostly being like Ryan Zimmerman, you know, a young kid at home and young family and just doesn't want to take the chance to go through this. So while I think you're going to see more people opt out, we haven't seen it in football yet. Again, football, you're still talking about an entire season of pay.
Yep.
And I'm telling you,
yes,
that
let's
is
not
a
pretend
monster,
like that's not a thing.
Monster factor. In the NBA, you're talking about eight more regular season games and then the playoffs. So they've gotten the majority of their pay. In baseball, it's going to turn out to be, if they play a full season and don't make the playoffs, it's 37% of your pay. NFL is still 100% of your pay. Provided the season starts, and provided they play a full season, you are getting 100% of your pay. And that is an important thing. While we're hearing players talk about getting, we need to see more and more information. There's still a month away to camp. We haven't seen any players opt out, but we are seeing it in other sports as July, as we've talked about, starts to ramp up to sports. But this is the reality check. When all of a sudden the runway, we're at the end of the runway and you start liftoff, you know, who's staying on board and who's saying, you know what, I think I'm gonna jump ship here.
Right, because we are inside of 30 days away from the start of training camp. And as we're getting set to that, the NFL Players Association has instructed their player agents to talk to all of their clients about the risk factors that could make them more susceptible to severe illness as the result of the coronavirus. And among the things they talk about, Mike, in this letter, players who may suffer from chronic kidney disease or COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease,
right.
Immune compromised state, weakened immune system from a solid organ transplant, serious heart condition, sickle cell disease, type 2 diabetes. And then there's this one, Mike, which is the first place I went when I saw this list, a BMI or a body mass index of 30 or higher. And let me be clear, according to the BMI, if you have a body mass index of 30 or higher, you are clinically or technically obese. Now, a lot of people would have some disputes with that, and I can understand why. But if you're talking about a BMI of 30, you have just described literally every single offensive lineman currently signed to a roster.
You could probably even go less than that to linebacker and or tight end. I'll get to the heights and weights in a minute. And understand when they have say all these things, it's not only the player, but remember the NFL is not going to be in a bubble. So players are going to be going to practice, flying to trips, and then coming home to family. So again, you're going to be involved in, you know, are you single? That may have a say on if you're going to play. Are you married? You have young kids,
yep.
You know, that you're coming home to every day from practice or from an away trip. So, and what if one of those kids, you know, if they have a weakened immune system, do you want to take that chance? So this is not just the player himself, but also the family as well. But as far as the BMI, now there are tons of charts out there. I just kind of picked a chart.
Right.
That basically BMI, you know, everybody understands, you know, the height and your body weight, your body mass. So it gives you how tall you are and the weight for your BMI.
And there's a lot of discrepancy about this.
There is. So listen, as I said, I picked up a chart. I'm sure people will tweet in at Golico Wingo different charts. If you can, great, because I'd like to see some different ones, because some of them you look at are like, wait a minute, like the one I'm looking at right now says, last I checked, 6 foot tall is 72 inches, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Just wanted to make sure of that.
Yeah, your quick math is good.
If you're 6 foot tall and you weigh 221 pounds, you are right at 30 BMI. You are right at the obese level.
Which is ridiculous.
If you're, and then just keep going up because you start look at tight ends, linebackers, obviously offensive linemen. They're usually that, you know, anywhere from 6'2 to, God, 6'8. But let's go to like 6'5", okay? 6 foot five or 6'4", 76 inches, 6'4". If you weigh 246 pounds, that's a BMI of 30, according to this chart, you are considered obese. Yeah. I mean, pick any linebacker, again, offensive lineman, tight end, and look at them.
Most defensive linemen.
Especially those linebackers and tight ends. Do they look like they're obese? Look at them.
Yeah.
So that's why I do think there are more updated versions, and I'm sure people will send them to me. But some of these are just height, you know, height and weight, and it gives you the BMIs. But it sounds ridiculous.
So there's no doubt
lineman as a lineman. Listen, when I played, I my closest weight was around 300, and there's no doubt my BMI was way over that. So and in all honesty, it is true. We don't live the healthiest lifestyle. Listen, we work our butts off. We eat like crazy. We burn a lot. And I will say this, players today, actually it started right as I was leaving the league in the mid 90s. Players have started to take much better care of themselves without question. Some of these guys, someone tell me Aaron Donald is obese.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
He's
no,
what,
no.
6'1", about 275, 280?
Yeah.
Look at him. But he would be considered obese by these charts. So, I mean, you kind of look at that and you chuckle a little bit. Some of these other things, obviously very serious. Chronic kidney disease, sickle cell, type 2 diabetes. Now, I have type 2 diabetes. I wasn't diagnosed until I was in my 40s.
Right.
For it. So it wasn't diagnosed while I was playing. But yeah, I mean, these guys are just, they're big and they're strong, and the BMI, I'm with you. I looked at that. I said, okay, that's going to be a bit ridiculous.
I mean, this is coming from the NFLPA. Let's be understand. This is the players union that is basically, they're basically saying every single lineman is at risk.
Yeah.
Is what they're saying.
And I'll include tight ends and linebackers because by this chart, they basically would be as well, which is, it's obviously crazy. But you know, that's where we are right now. But you know, along those lines, this is what the NFLPA has put out. Randall Cobb said, you know, he wants updated procedures from the NFL and the NFLPA. He says, can we have an update on training camp procedures, testing, et cetera? We're 4 weeks from the assumed start of training camp, and it would be nice to have adequate info before I attempt to move my family across country during a pandemic. Because again, where the NBA is saying families can come after the first round of the playoffs. So that's a little while before families can even come there. For the NFL and for baseball, again, these people are going to be with their families. And some of them that don't live in the cities they play in the offseason are going to have to move their entire family to whatever state they play in or whatever city they play in and do what they would normally do during a season. And some of these players are looking for info because it's not just them. Again, it's their families who they will continue to come back to every day.
Well, look, we have the NFL is encouraging, basically saying training camps should be at your facilities, right?
They can't be away from their facility.
So we have Texas, where you got the Cowboys and the Texans, and you have all kinds of spikes in coronavirus cases there. You have Florida, where we've got several teams, and coronavirus cases are spiraling there. We have Arizona, where they're really spiking. They've just shut down all the gyms. So my question is, if you're shutting down gyms, what does that mean for a training facility?
In Arizona, they're back to no groups greater than 50.
Right.
So you have July. Now, that's a lot of times the college players are working out on their own that have come back, and some of the Arizona State have players coming back, but they can work them out in smaller groups. But you're supposed to start training camp for the Arizona Cardinals at the end of the month. They got, last I checked, they got more than 50, unless they plan on just practicing a little bit here and a little bit there.
Yeah, it'd be 90 people in camp normally.
If this stays in effect for a while, would they have to think about doing camp somewhere else? And, and some teams have talked about that. You know, we've talked about that. Remember a while ago, we talked about that with New York, with the Giants and the Jets.
Yep.
Where they were. But now, I mean, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island are some of the better states now of how they've contained it, and it's gone to some of the other states with the spikes.
I was texting with a current player, and I asked him yesterday, what do you think about the NFL season? And this was his direct quote. Think we start camp on time, then, in his words, all hell will break loose from there. So, I mean, look, we've said it a million times, the NFL and football in general has had the luxury of time in all of this, but when push comes to shove, and I mean literally push coming to shove, you're going to be doing that in camp, and there's no way to get around that. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. Cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. Coming up, one college conference is considering moving their football season to the spring. And if history is an indication, we should be paying attention to it. We'll explain that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. So Heather Dinich has a very interesting story up on ESPN.com. And it's basically saying the Ivy League is pondering a couple of scenarios.
Yes, they are.
And the way to play football. Really considering two possibilities for an altered football season due to the pandemic.
So before we get to that, there are colleges that have already said they're dumping football.
Morehouse is one of them.
Morehouse College in Atlanta, Williams College in Massachusetts, Bowdoin College in Maine, and Williams and Bowdoin are both in the same conference, are among the schools that have already canceled fall sports, which includes football. And Grinnell College in Iowa has canceled their early competition for fall sports. So there are some football programs or some schools that have canceled fall sports already.
Starting to go down those roads. And again, the article on .com from Heather Dinich is something that started on TMG Sports. Basically, the Ivy League is considering opening the 2020 season in late September with a 7-game schedule against only conference opponents. The Ivy League normally plays a 10-game schedule that tentatively begins this season on September 19th. But what's really interesting, they're also looking at foregoing the entire fall in favor of a 7-game conference-only spring season that would begin in April and conclude in mid-May. And why is that interesting? Well, obviously, the Ivy League, they're very close to each other. They're all isolated in the Northeast for the most part. But it was the Ivy League, and specifically Harvard, where the pandemic was really hit hard in February by that conference where everybody came in from across the league, from across the world, and they were really hit hard by the coronavirus at the start of all of this. Harvard was the one who was scheduled to have the Ivy League men's basketball tournament, their postseason tournament, the Ivy League tournament, on their campus. And they pulled the plug before anybody, and they said, we are not holding this. And obviously, we talked to a lot of the coaches about that, how upset they were in all this, and how they had to relay that information to their seniors. And then, lo and behold, a trickle-down effect came from Harvard and the Ivy League's decision to not hold that tournament in Boston.
Right.
Now, I get it. It's much easier for the Ivy League because of proximity and the way that league is run to pull the plug than it would be for everybody else. But then what happened? The ACC and all the other big conferences and the SEC all pulled their tournaments, which in effect led to the NCAA pulling their tournament, all after the Rudy Gobert positive test in the NBA. And we alluded to it yesterday that Rudy Gobert still hasn't completely recovered from his coronavirus symptoms 3+ months ago. He still doesn't have his complete sense of smell back. So the question then becomes, Mike, because football is a different dynamic. Yes, college basketball is a big-time product and a big-time moneymaker for the big-time schools in the big-time conferences. But compare that to college football and the money and the revenue that is generated by college football in those big-time college teams and conferences, it is a much bigger deal. Do you see this as a warning sign or a one-off potentially for football on the collegiate level that the Ivy League is considering a seven-game spring schedule?
I think this whole year is a one-off, right, on what they're going to do. And the one thing the Ivy League thinks they're in a good position of waiting because what they don't do, they don't have their athletes come back in the summer. So we're talking about all the schools, like especially the Power Fives, that have had players, student athletes coming in since June and being tested, and we've heard a lot of positive, which was to be expected. The Ivy League doesn't do that. They do not bring their athletes in to participate in summer workouts. So they feel they're at an advantage there by keeping them away longer. They haven't opened their campuses yet at all because there are no athletes there. It will be interesting, Trey, because remember, football is not the only sport that goes on in the fall. Now, I'm trying to read through this, or reading through this article. There are other fall sports as well. So are they talking about moving those sports as well, not playing them at all either? Because now you're talking about football playing into spring. There are spring sports that are played in college in the Ivy League as well. So I'm trying to find out, and I don't know if I quickly missed it. If I did,
I'm looking through it right here.
What's going on with the other fall sports? Are they just canceling the other fall sports and saying they're not doing anything, or are they pushing them to the spring where then you have your fall sports and spring sports all together playing at the same time? So I know we always talk about football and football being king, and I get it because it's a revenue producer, so I understand that. But there's a hell of a lot of student athletes at all schools that play other sports, you know, other than football. So I wondered what's going on with those other sports as well.
I mean, just think to that point, like you're talking about with they can bubble it better than any other league because they basically don't fly to games. The longest ride for an Ivy League football game is Penn, which is in Philadelphia, to Dartmouth, which is in New Hampshire, and that's about a 6-hour ride.
Right.
So we're talking about a very small, congested area where they can put containment parameters on it.
It is
much different than any other sport.
You're just not traveling to other parts of the country, but you're still traveling. You're going, you're staying in a hotel. I doubt they're just driving in on game days.
No, would not be possible.
Staying in hotels, eating, I mean, they're still going to have to follow a lot of protocol that, like baseball and the NFL and college football, we're talking about college football, they would have to go through. As far as going somewhere and then coming back to your campus. So that will be interesting. And again, they have a little more time to decide because their athletes aren't around. Their athletes aren't there. So they feel that's an advantage to them to kind of see how things play out, by the time we get into, you know, into July, the end of July, into August. Normal teams have their voluntary workouts with the strength coach through June and part of July, and then they'll get a few weeks off, and then they'll show up in the beginning of August and start their actual, like, camp before the season starts. The Ivy League start a little bit later than that normally because, again, they don't have any of that voluntary stuff. So they feel they're at a bit of an advantage on waiting a little longer to see how everything kind of plays out before they have to make their decision.
And then there's the whole issue of what will happen in the fall, where we've been talking about if there's a strong flu season, playing sports into October and November, and football would be definitely outdoors in those situations for the most part. How that would affect things. Well, Dr. Michael Sag from the University of Alabama, Birmingham, was on Freddie and Fitzsimmons, and basically he laid out why he's not confident at all in sports coming back this fall.
Right now we're in the middle of a fairly large surge of cases of coronavirus, and if that continues as it is right now going into the fall, I think it puts all sports in jeopardy from my perspective. Why? Because when we have that much transmission going on in the community, it means that every athlete, no matter what the sport, outside of the bubble where they're playing, we can try to make that safe. But when they walk outside that bubble, they're in the community, which is becoming more and more of a risk for infecting the athletes and interfering with their ability to play.
It is going to be interesting, not only the NBA in the bubble, but remember the NHL, they still have to pick two cities. They're going to somewhat bubble in on what their positive tests are compared to college sports, the NFL, Major League Baseball, who are basically doing this the regular way.
Yeah.
When nothing seems regular right now, they're going to do it the regular way with training camps and traveling to games and going back to their homes. College guys, college players, college athletes going to their sport, another college, coming back to their dorm. So it is a little different now. And I'll be interested. The Ivy League has given themselves, we keep using the runway analogy.
Yeah.
They've given themselves, they have a little more of a runway than Correct. Even the rest of college football or the NFL does.
So we'll see what happens there. Unless people want to take precautions now to try and nip this thing in the bud. And by the way, there's a real simple thing you can do.
Yeah.
Put on a bleeping mask.
And social distance.
It seems like that's not that much to ask, yet some people think it's the craziest thing in the world. Yeah. Coming up, Vegas says the Patriots are now co-favorites to win the AFC East. What does Booger say? We'll get him off his bike to talk about it after SportsCenter. All right, Golic and Wingo here with you. Glad you're with us. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, including our next guest, who was kind enough to get 5 minutes off his Peloton bike and his Buns of Anarchy routine that he normally goes through to join us and talk a little football. And that is our fine football analyst, Booger McFarland. Boog, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, gents. How y'all doing?
Doing well.
We're doing well. So we think Cam's doing well. We think the Patriots are doing well. What was your initial reaction to Cam signing with the Patriots, beside obviously this being the most Bill Belichick move of all time?
Yeah, I think we all agree with that. Not surprising. You know, as the dominoes fell throughout the offseason and, you know, all the quarterback seats were taken, there were only a few chances where Cam, who by and large wants to be a starting quarterback, I think we all realize that. His mindset, his personality is not built for that of a backup. There were only a few starting spots left where he could go in and compete, should I say. You think of New England, you think Jacksonville. Other than that, everybody else's starting job is pretty much spoken for either by an incumbent or by a young draft pick that was drafted really high. So I thought it made a lot of sense. And, you know, if you're the Patriots, to me this is a pick that really – is all about the upside, and there's very little downside. Because at the very worst, if Cam is terrible, he's not healthy, you cut him, you only lose a very minimal amount of money. But if he's healthy and rejuvenated and you can build an offense around him, you're getting a guy that has MVP caliber potential. And, you know, this offense needs playmakers based on what we saw last year.
Will Cam beat out Jared Stidham for the Pats starting job? Yes. That's a loaded question. Loaded Question is brought to you by Barbasol Shaving Cream, an American original for over 100 years. Close Shave America, Close Shave Barbasol.
Booger, your biggest concern with Cam Newton?
Well, you know, for me, it's always been the same thing with Cam. I mean, if you take out 2015, which is the anomaly year, Cam has pretty much been a 55 to 57% passer. He's been a guy that's made a living more with his legs than he has with his arm. And so if you're really being honest, you got to ask yourself, how many times have we seen 31-year-old running quarterbacks dominate from an athletic standpoint with their feet? It doesn't happen often. So if you're really being honest with yourself and not living in the past, you got to wonder, can this quarterback at 31 do what's made him special? Because let's be honest, Cam's arm has not made him special. It's been his ability to elude rushers in the pocket, and now you got 6'5", 6'6", 250 pounds barreling at you, and nobody wants to hit that. If he still has that, good luck. If he doesn't, are we really thinking that Cam Newton can beat us from the pocket? I don't. So my biggest concern is he healthy? More importantly, can he stay healthy?
Well, that's the thing, right? We always say, you see a lot of young running quarterbacks. You don't see a lot of old ones.
Michael Vick did it, yes. In his early 30s when he came out of prison and went to Philadelphia. He was able to run a little bit, but he certainly was a special runner.
He absolutely was. And there was the season bug in 2018 when he was paired with Norv Turner as offensive coordinator. He was hitting on almost 68% of his passes.
That's something everybody wants to bring up, all right?
Yeah.
You know, having covered, and I did a couple of Cam Newton games, everybody brings up the Norv Turner season and said, man, Cam fixed his accuracy. You know what Cam did and Norv Turner did? They stopped throwing the football down the field. Cam checked the football down. He threw the ball shorter underneath. Now, I get it. When you throw the ball shorter, you can be more accurate. But let's not make the mistake to say, man, all of a sudden Cam and Norv solved the accuracy issue. Because if you go back and look during that season, when he threw the ball over 15 yards, he was still the same guy. They just threw the ball a lot shorter and threw it to the running backs and a lot of slants that year.
It sounds to me like that's exactly the offense we'll be running in New England, exactly. Though, Booger, right? We're not looking at an offense that has all downfield receivers that are going to blow the lid off the top of a defense. That's exactly what they want to run, though.
And if they do that and he can be accurate the way he was in 2018, I'll give it to you. Again, I still don't think that, that New England is getting Cam Newton to say, you know what, man, Cam can be the second coming of Tom Brady, be accurate underneath, throw the football with timing and accuracy and make good decisions. Like, you're not getting Cam Newton to be Tom Brady-esque. You're getting Cam Newton because the new NFL says we're going to spread it out, okay? We're going to go Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson type, Patrick Mahomes. It's going to be RPOs. We're going to get our quarterback in space, and we're going to allow the field to be spread and hope we can make plays that way. Like, that's the new NFL. That's what everybody is trying to get to. Look at the Chargers. Anthony Lynn said they wanted a mobile quarterback. Like, everybody is trying to go with the athletic mobile guy. So the Patriots want to get Cam running the football. That, make no mistake about that. I just hope he is healthy, number one, and two, that he stays healthy and can do it.
Talking to Booger McFarland, our ESPN football analyst and two-time Super Bowl champ. We were discussing this yesterday, Booger, what this does for New England. We and if you disagree, you can say we have Kansas City clearly number one and Baltimore number two. Then we are trying to think of, in Trey's term, three-ish, you know, between if you want to put the Patriots in there now, the Pittsburgh Steelers with Ben back, Tennessee, can they reduplicate what they did? The Colts getting Phillip Rivers or another team in there, where would you go after Kansas City and Baltimore if those are the two teams you have on top?
Wow. If you're looking at any AFC, Kansas City, Baltimore, you know, Houston is a team, as much as we give Bill O'Brien a lot of flack for what they've done and some of the, you know, the trades and moves that the GM Bill O'Brien has made. I mean, Houston has made the playoffs a lot. Now, they haven't gone very far, but under Bill O'Brien, they won a division and made the playoffs a lot. I got to think Houston is up there. I'm still bullish on Buffalo, and I understand people are going to look at Josh Allen very similar to what I said about Cam Newton, a quarterback that's inaccurate and erratic. But Buffalo reminds me of a couple of teams that I were on. You know, you get into the postseason, you knock on the door with a young team, you bring the nucleus back like we did in Tampa, you bring the nucleus back like we did in Indianapolis, and when you get that group of guys who continue to work and push forward, and then finally you get over the hump. I just think this is Buffalo's year to kind of get over the hump, win the AFC East. And once you win the AFC East, you get a playoff game at home, and we'll see where it goes down the road. But I like Buffalo, but I do agree with most people that it's Kansas City and Baltimore, the top two in the AFC.
Well, with that in mind, I mean, if Buffalo doesn't win the division, there might be repercussions there, correct? I mean, because it's all been set up for them.
Yeah. I don't know how many repercussions. I think people are ready to kind of, you know, give up a little bit on Josh Allen and the Sean McDermott experiment. I'm not. I don't think this is a make or break year for them. You know, our biggest problem right now in sports is we're too impatient. We want it right now. I mean, the quarterback is still young. He's building something. He got his first taste of the postseason last year, that being Josh Allen. You have a young defense. Like, the starting middle linebacker, the star player, Tremaine Edmonds, is, what, 23 years old, I think. So this is a very, very young team, although, Trey, there are a lot of expectations for them next season. I don't think this is a make-or-break year just yet in Buffalo.
Booger, with what's going on in the country with the pandemic, and we're seeing players in other sports before they report starting to opt out. Now, some it's a shortened season, some it's a resumption of the season. The NFL is trying to get a full season in and has about a month to go before training camp. Do you foresee players opting out in the NFL and not playing this year?
You know, Mike, I don't. I think a more likely scenario is everybody's going to show up. Everybody's going to try to give it their best foot, and we'll see where it goes. No one knows what the virus is going to do, especially when the weather turns in the fall. And, oh, by the way, football is played in the fall. So we'll see where it goes. But I got to think most football players are kind of like me and you. Like, if someone told me, hey, here are the issues, and, you know, I got $3 or $4, $5, $6 million on the table, I'm going to show up and go play. And then if something happens and I have to make an adjustment, I'll make the adjustment, but I'm not going to live in fear. I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day, and he was like, you know, I've been dealing with this for 3 or 4 months now, and I'm starting to get to the point where I feel like I'm just existing and not living. And I think a lot of people around this country are starting to feel that way, especially the athletes who already feel like they're invincible. So I think everybody's going to show up and play, man, and hopefully we can get it in. We'll see where it goes. But I don't think anybody's going to opt out for fear unless they have a very, very extreme pre-existing condition themselves or directly in their family.
Yeah, that's going to be a decider, I think, for a lot of people. So we'll see what happens. Listen, I'm with you. I think we're going to start training camp. Then I have no idea what happens after that. Boog, always a pleasure. Now get back on the course and tee it up, okay?
Anytime. The tee time is not till tomorrow. I have a little work to do today, Trey.
Oh! Got to get that honeydew list out of the way.
Exactly,
huh?
Right. All right, Boog, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, man. Yeah, he's the best. All right, coming up next, how about this? The best basketball player outside the NBA has already committed to Sparty, but don't call it a Sparty party just yet. Mm. We'll tell you why after this. Skolik and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
I stand by that 1,000%. Skolik and Wingo, presented by Progressive Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. And by the way, with July 4th coming up on Saturday, it's a day I love because there's always the Nathan's hot dog eating contest that goes on.
Speaking of hot dogs.
And that is still happening. Normally we know how that is just a packed place in Coney Island, packed with tons of people. It's still going on, but it's not going to be packed with people. It's going to be at a different location still there in that area. And there's just going to be, I think, five or six competitors on each side, women's side and men's side. Joey Chestnut will be there competing for his record 13th title on the men's side. Mickey Sudo will be competing in the women's contest going for his seventh title. So there'll be just a few competitors. And the fun is, my son Mike will be doing the play-by-play. He's doing the play-by-play. Richard Shea, oh, they're so good with that.
Is it play-by-play or bite-by-bite? What do you think is more accurate?
I guess bite-by-bite. And Richard Shea will give the color commentary, and Jason Fitz will be there. He'll be interviewing the competitors and the contestants and doing the reporting on it. So pretty cool for them. I mean, listen, to me, that's the jewel. You know, everybody talks about, oh, Monday Night Football is the jewel to do. No. Being able to do the hot dog eating contest is the jewel.
That explains so much.
I've missed out on the jewel of what I feel in my profession would be, and my son Mike gets to do it. So I'm very, very happy for him.
I think everything that Junior has done has led up to this moment.
I think we
feel pretty clearly about that.
It's a culmination, and from this moment, you know, a lot depends on where he's going to go from here, on how well he can handle his duties on Saturday. So he, Jason Fitch, Richard Shea, we'll be calling that again. It will be on 12 o'clock Eastern on ESPN like it normally is. It certainly will look a little different, but there will be a lot of hot dogs eaten. And before everybody starts again with the waste of food, Nathan's donates over 100,000 hot dogs. They donate to food banks. They donate so much food. Before I know, we start with all of that, which I hear every single year. They do a great job in donating food, and I love watching this event. Maybe someday I'll be like my son and be able to host the event.
Well, that's the whole thing. Maybe all of us someday will be like the better version of ourselves.
Yeah,
right? That's the way this goes. By the way, Jason Fitz will be doing the interviews socially distanced, of course.
Yes, he will.
And that's a sport where being socially distanced and doing the interviews makes all the sense
it's a
in
good
the world.
Thing.
Otherwise, you will get showered with all kinds of little bits of stuff more than anything else. And so congratulations.
Yeah, that's going to be a cool thing. And then we talked about, again, this kid. A little earlier, he just finished his sophomore year. Imani Bates from Michigan was the Gatorade National Player of the Year, the first sophomore to be named the National Player of the Year. He's 6'9", about 205 pounds, averaged 31 points, 9 rebounds a game, played for Ypsilanti Lincoln High School, is now going to play for Ypsilanti Prep Academy, Aim High, which is going to be a brand new school. His father is going to be coaching.
Yeah.
And they have they're getting other recruits, like big time high school players, and they want to play a national schedule. They want to play at college arenas and NBA arenas.
We've seen these sort of things happen
before
in some of these schools, right? That was basically a Nike Prep Academy.
And this is going to happen
in rural Virginia.
If they pull this off and get the recruits they're talking about together on this team, and Imani's father is going to coach them. He had coached his AAU team as well. We'll be televising this game, just like we were LeBron James. This guy, there are people that say he would be the first pick in this year's NBA draft. He is going to reclassify. Again, he's going into his junior year. He's going to reclassify so he can be done with high school after this year. He's committed to Michigan State, but there are those that think he may never see Michigan State.
And that includes our own Myron Metcalf, who, of course, does ESPN Radio for us and is a college basketball reporter. He was on with Freddie and Fitzsimmons last night talking about that specific thing. And listen to the comparisons Myron makes when talking about Amani Bates.
I don't think he'll go to Michigan State, but here's why. I actually don't think it'll come down to should I go to Michigan State, should I go to a G League, the G League system now for some of these young guys, should I go overseas. I think a shoe company's going to come in, a Nike, an Under Armour, someone like that, and say, here's $30, $40 million. You're the biggest thing possibly since LeBron James. His games are going to be nationally televised now in the next couple years as a junior and senior. So more and more people are going to get to know him. His stock will be so high that I think he'll get a pro deal, a shoe deal. He'll get other endorsements, and he just won't be able to go to Michigan State because I don't think the name, image, and likeness rules, whatever they might be, are going to allow you to come on campus with a $20, $30 million apparel deal. I think they should, but they just won't. I think Imani Bates is doing what he feels now. But I don't think we'll ever see him on a college basketball court.
So here's the twist to it. Again, the NBA currently requires prospects to be 1 year out of high school and turn 19 during the calendar year of the draft.
Yeah.
So even though he is trying to reclassify and be out of high school this year, it's still the 4 years of high school. So there would be another year and then another year of that 1 year out of high school. And then he doesn't even fulfill the turning. He doesn't turn 19 until January of 2023.
Dear Lord.
So unless they change the rules where, like, LeBron James was able to go from high school to the pros, he would have to be in college for a couple of years, which leads people to believe he may not go there because of the fact that he could go play overseas, or if they're really picking that G League up, doing that and get that monster shoe deal. Because if he goes to college, and even if they have the name, image, and likeness thing applied by then,
right,
he's not making that money.
No.
Guys aren't making that money when they're in college. So it's going to be real interesting what happens with this guy. And you watch him play. It's not even basketball. He is such a man amongst boys when he's playing basketball. It's unreal.
Well, Myron Metcalf said he compared him to LeBron James. And he said, listen, I want to be clear. I'm not comparing his skill set to LeBron James. But the hype about this guy, that's the level he's at. So I know we don't have a lot of time here, but you don't believe he's going to Michigan State, do you?
I do not think he's going to go to
Michigan State. Is there benefit from Tom Izzo, even by saying this guy has committed to Michigan State if he was going to play basketball, because of the ancillary effect?
Probably, in the fact that if he was going to go to school, and it just works out better for him if he doesn't, that it would have been Michigan State. He's a Michigan kid as well. He's always loved Michigan State, so that part of it wasn't a surprise.
Yeah, I think that, you talk about a down ballot effect in an election. I think there may be a down ballot effect for Tom Izzo here, because Bates said if he's going to go to college, he would go there. Coming up, everyone says if Cam Newton is healthy, he's a great fit. Is he going to be healthy? We'll ask someone who knows next. Stay with us.